All stand. Crying or calling, all stand is resumed. Please be seated. Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Honour. I thought I'd finish. I just have 1 minute to go, if I may.
Sure.
Ms. Campagnaro, can you hear me again?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. I don't want to repeat anything that we've dealt with, but just to focus your mind, just before lunch, we spoke about people freely using racist language around the station and how some people are quite the opposite and don't do that. And then I asked you about a number of people who you might have remembered, and you gave some answers about your memory of how, what sort of language they used. What I failed to do, Ms. Campagnaro, is just mention a few other names to you, which, as a matter of fairness to them, I ought to mention. So it's just got to make sure you're clear in your mind about what your memory is. Either you remember they used racist language freely, or quite the opposite, or you simply don't know and can't say. Understand?
Yes.
One of the names is James Kirstenfeld or Jimmy Kirstenfeld.
Yes.
What would you say about his language?
I heard him speak racist very often.
All right. Shane McCormack or Paddy McCormack with an Irish accent?
No, not that I can recall.
Senior Sergeant Alistair Gall?
No, not that I can recall.
And when you say not that you can recall, in both the case of McCormack and Gore, you remember them as people, but you don't recall them using racist language freely. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct.
And finally, Constable Bree Bonney. Did you know?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Sorry, I just got distracted. What was your answer for Constable Bree Bonney?
Yes, I heard Bree Bonney using that language.
And Constable Zendelli?
Yes, I do remember.
Using racist language freely?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, thank you very much.
Ms. Campagnaro, my name's Ed Woodson, and I appear on behalf of Zachary Roth.
Hello.
Hello. Ms. Campagnaro, can I start by asking you this? You've given some evidence today about what might be described as systemic racism, officers, lots of them, using racist terms against members of the community in Alice Springs.
Yes.
You make no mention of that in the statements that have been filed and presented to this court.
Well, I object. There is one interview with Ms. Campagnaro where she hasn't filed a number of statements where she talks with that.
There's one interview and two further statements. You don't deal with the issue of systemic racism, do you, in those documents?
If it's not there, then no, I didn't.
So when was the first time that somebody asked you about your recollection back in 2018 of who might be expressing things in racially offensive terms?
Sorry, what was that? I didn't hear.
When was the first time anyone asked you about your recollection of anyone expressing themselves in racist terms?
I can't recall.
Well, you've given evidence about it today.
Yes.
I assume before you gave evidence in this court, you spoke to other people, other lawyers, about the evidence you might give.
Yes.
Were you asked questions about whether you could recall anybody using racist terms before giving evidence in court?
I object to any questions which would intrude on the professional privilege, huh?
Well, I'm not quite sure how that would intrude on the professional privilege, Your Honour.
She's big.
Alright, sorry, I'll do it another way. I want you to, you've obviously spoken to your lawyer, who is Dr. Freckleton.
Yeah.
And obviously those communications are private. Have you spoken to anybody else who's not your lawyer about the evidence you might give on the topic of racism at the workplace?
Do you mean friends, family? Is that who you're trying to get at?
I'm talking about lawyers getting ready to come and give evidence in court. For example, you've spoken to counsel assistants.
Yeah.
And were you asked questions before giving evidence in court about whether you could recall anybody talking in racist terms?
I've only spoken to that with my lawyer.
Right, okay. I want to know anything about what you've spoken to with your lawyer. Next thing I want to ask you is this. You've identified those officers that you say would from time to time, if not frequently, use racist expressions. What about you?
Yes. Not that I can recall.
Never?
I'm not going to say never, because I just cannot think back to 4 years ago of every single thing that I have ever said.
Of course not, but you seem to remember lots of what other people have said back then.
Yes.
Well, I'm simply asking you this. I got the impression that anybody who used racist language you found offensive.
Yes.
And no doubt you would have said so at the time to those who were friends of yours or were colleagues.
Not that I can recall, no.
What about Zach Roth? Did you ever say to him, for example, I don't like you talking in those terms?
Yes, I did say that to him throughout our relationship.
And what did he say to that?
I cannot recall.
All right. All right, let's deal with this particular incident involving Mr. Malcolm Ryder. We know that the incident occurred on the 11th of January 2018. You may not remember the date, but can you accept that from me?
Yes, I can.
And the first time that you were asked to give an account of your involvement in that particular incident, or at least insofar as speaking to Zachary Roth and others, was in your first interview, which was conducted on the 19th of August 2020?
That's correct.
And you've got a copy of that in front of you, haven't you?
Yes, I do.
And you've been taken to parts of it by various counsel?
Yes.
And you can see that the person asking the questions is Detective Sergeant Wayne Buell, who was present, but I should say the person predominantly asking is Detective Senior Sergeant Kurt Tanuta.
That's correct.
I want you to have the statement in front of you, because I'm going to ask you some questions about it, if I may.
Go ahead.
Can you turn to page 10? I'm going to take you from page 10 through to page 12.
Yep.
All right. There's a couple of key dates I just need to put on record to put this in sequence. The Ryder incident is the 11th of January 2018. When were you engaged to Zachary?
March 29th.
March the 29th, 2018. There was an occasion, was there, worse than not, when you attended at Government House in Canberra, where Zachary Rolfe received a medal for bravery?
That's correct.
When was that?
I can't recall. I don't know.
Was it before you were engaged or after you were engaged?
I believe it was afterwards.
After you were engaged? So
that's
at
correct.
That time you were not engaged, but you had commenced your relationship with him?
At which time?
When you attended at the Government House.
No, I believe we were engaged.
I'm sorry, you were. My apologies. Yeah, thank you, Ron. Now, we know that the Malcolm Ryder went to trial in September 2018.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know if she knows that, but you're telling her.
Will you accept that? For me, we've got transcript that shows the dates that the matter went to trial.
I only know that date because various people have told me in these proceedings.
All right, just accept, if you wouldn't mind, that the coroner has on file the date of the trial and the transcript of the trial. Well, I just need to understand some of the people that you knew who were involved on the 11th of January 2018. Obviously, Zachary Rolfe.
Correct.
A person that you didn't particularly like at that point in time.
Where are you getting that assumption from?
Wasn't that what you said? You didn't particularly like him at that time?
She didn't like him because of the incident.
Exactly.
So she formed it, the opinion, on the basis of this incident.
On the basis of this incident, is it the case that you didn't particularly like him?
I'd say yes.
So, in other words, as at the 11th of January 2019, on the basis of this incident, you didn't like him?
I'm not going to say that I didn't like him. I can't go back 4 years and tell you exactly how I felt at that point in time.
Thank you. In any event, you happened to be in the station when you had a conversation with him.
That's correct.
And we know, don't we, that the conversation occurred around changeover, didn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And so that would have made it about 3 p.m. in the afternoon?
Yes, that's correct.
And you told us that it was obvious that Mr. Ryder had suffered a significant injury to his head as a consequence of his apprehension.
That's correct.
We know that the police officers who were involved, including Zachary Rolfe, had OC spray all over them.
That's correct.
That you could see.
I could see that Zach was covered in OC spray.
And you knew some of the others who were involved in his apprehension?
Yes.
And you had this conversation at the police station with Zachary Rolfe?
That's correct.
Did that occur before you had interviewed or after the interview with Malcolm Ryder?
Before.
Before. So before you went into the interview with Malcolm Ryder, you had this conversation with Zachary Rolfe, and you were at that point in time, can I suggest, in the presence of your partner, Mr. Fisher, or Fish?
I don't know that he was there.
So you can't
tell
one way or the other?
No, I cannot.
You don't remember?
Nope. No,
but
I don't.
You do know that it was both you and Fish who conducted the interview with Mr. Ryder?
That's correct.
And when you spoke to him, where were you when you spoke to Zachary Rolfe?
It was in the corner of the police station near the front, like the front office there, mm-hmm. the front desk.
And
so in the corner part.
You've told us that it occurred around the changeover, and that's what you told Panuto on page 10 of your interview, so that puts it at around 3 p.m. We've established that much.
Yes.
And when you saw him, you were able to see and identify an injury to his forehead, weren't you?
To his forehead.
Zachary Rolfe.
No.
Well, isn't that what you told Mr. Panuto in the interview?
That's the injury of Malcolm Ryder, is what that is referring to.
Can I take you to the bottom of page 11 of your interview?
Yes.
Right at the bottom, a member who worked upstairs, that was a detective that scratched him. I do not know who it was. He never said who it was, not to me. You see that?
Yes.
That's where you're describing, aren't you, what you claim Zachary Rolfe had told you was the cause of the scratch or the mark on his forehead.
No, that's not what the forehead remark is referring to.
Well, what scratch are you referring to?
I'm referring to the gash on Ryder's head. The scratch was separate.
Well, let's just follow it through if we can. If you look at the bottom of page 11, have you got it in front of you?
Yes, I do.
A member who worked upstairs that was a detective had scratched you. You're referring to the female detective that you claim Zachary Rolfe had told you had scratched you.
Yes.
I do not know who it was. He never said who it was, not to me. In other words, Zachary Rolfe never told you who that female detective was.
That's correct.
And then over the page, okay, Mr. Panuto goes on. Can you recall whether or not there was any visible injury that you saw? And you said, I think there was literally a scratch from someone scratching him. That's a reference to Zachary Rolfe, is it not?
That's correct. But then I also say, I actually can't remember. I don't want to guess.
All right. But nonetheless, that's what you told him, isn't it? That you recalled at that stage that there was a visible injury that you saw. In that stage of the interview, Your Honour.
In that stage of the interview, yes. And, Your Honour, I just... Sorry, Ms. Richardson, I'm entitled to make an objection. And
you are indeed.
Thank you very much. What Panuto asks is, can you recall whether or not there was any visible injury that you saw? And Ms. Campagnaro replies, I think there was literally a scratch from someone scratching him. Can you describe for me where? I'm trying to think. I actually can't remember. I don't want to guess. And he says, no, don't guess. And she says, I can't recall where it was, but it was a scratch. That's a full outline of what was said.
And Ms. Campagnaro has it in front of her, Your Honour.
I know, but I'm also concerned about the sequence in which the
position
has been put.
Because
it seems to me from reading this interview that there are a number of conversations with Zachary Rolfe about this incident.
Mm-hmm.
There's the one before the record of interview is conducted, or the attempted record of interview is conducted, and it appears to be referring to the possibility of other conversations as well.
Yes, Your Honour.
So the suggestion that this all happened in that first conversation, I don't read that when I read the interview, but I could be wrong.
I understand, Your Honour. I'll try and clarify by reference to the transcript. Can I go back to, if I may, your initial description, which we have on page 10? And that's where, for the first time, you actually identify the first conversation that you have with Zachary Rolfe at the changeover at about 3 p.m. We see that?
Yes.
All right. And you said this. I was working with, I can't remember his name. We now know that that's Fish, but we can't remember his full name. Is that right?
That's correct.
He's out somewhere. We came in and we were on a changeover. So they'd been, I think we had been, we were doing evening and they were doing morning, and we had to obviously had to interview this guy that they'd just arrested, and they were all covered in spray. So that's you describing your first interaction with Zachary Rolfe with Fish when he gets back to the police station at about 3 p.m.
That's correct.
So Zach's was, they'd all been sprayed, but all the members had been sprayed. So Zach had been sprayed and all the other members had been sprayed, you said then.
Involved in that job, yes.
Yes. His ex-girlfriend was on that patrol group. She was involved in that job, someone called Maxie. He was involved in that job. A detective in the Northern Territory was involved in that job, who I really like. So this is all information that he was telling you about what had occurred, and you weren't present, of course.
I was present when him and I were speaking.
Yes, of course. He was telling you or describing to you the incident, the arrest of Malcolm. Right.
That's a question. I know it sounds like a statement, but he's asking whether or not those were things that Zach had told you, like listing the names of the other people who were on the job.
I don't know that he specifically listed me the names, but I would have been told who was involved in that job.
All right.
I can't tell you who, but I don't know.
All right. In any event, you refer after that to this person that you really liked. You said you can't remember his name. I've got him on Facebook, Brett. He's a detective.
Yeah.
Back then, you were very, very prolific, were you not, on both Facebook and Instagram?
That's correct. Questions?
That's correct. Anyway, you continue on. Brett's a straight shooter, and so I remember there, so it was a domestic violence job. I'm just trying to remember, and they've all gone in, and apparently the defendant, Malcolm Ryder, like shone his phone at them, and that was kind of their justification for spraying him. I'll just pause there for a moment. Who gave you that description of what happened when Malcolm Ryder was arrested?
I can't recall who specifically told me the ins and outs of the job.
So was it not just Zach alone that was contributing to this conversation, this description of what had happened?
I'd say no, because it was, you know, general knowledge of the people at the station. I can't tell you exactly who told me. It was a very long time ago.
Well, did Zach Rolfe contribute at all in this description that we've got?
I just feel that this is unfair, Mr. Edmondson. This interview appears to be recounting information that Ms. Campagnaro could remember 2 years after the event when she was asked about a particular incident. She's being asked about a conversation, but it's not clear to me that all of the information that is included in this very long paragraph can be attributed to one conversation with Zachary Rolfe.
Couldn't agree more, Your Honour.
Whether it is a compilation of information.
Couldn't agree more. That's what I'm trying to clarify, Your Honour.
Okay, then you could ask her that, but the way you're doing it is suggesting and trying to force her into a position.
I'm not trying to force anybody into anything, Your Honour. I'm trying to cross-examine.
Okay, then you can do it in a way which is fair.
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honour, I don't understand how that's unfair at all. Not a single question that I've asked with the greatest of respect is unfair.
Well, it's putting a proposition as though this is all a conversation or all this information has arisen from one conversation with one person.
Your Honour, I just qualified that very issue with the witness and tried to understand whether this is what Zachary Rolfe is telling a witness, or whether others contributed to it, or whether it's just talk around the police station.
All right. But when you suggested that others contributed to it, you wanted to put it in a proposition that there were other people present at the one conversation with Zachary Rolfe, and you were rolling up those concepts in a way which I don't think is clear or fair. So if you would like to ask...
If you're on a please, I'll rephrase.
Thank you.
Ms. Camp-Yarra, I appreciate it's a long time ago. I don't expect you to remember every detail of what happened. Even at the time that you participated in this interview, I'm simply trying to understand what you can now recall. Do you understand?
I understand.
Now, the first time that you gave a description of how you learnt about the Malcolm Ryder incident, we see appears on page 10. What Her Honour's concerned about is whether that description, which appears on page 10, is all information that came from Zachary Rolfe, or did it come from all sorts of people? Was it lots of conversations? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand, and like I've said, it's come from a compilation of people.
Right. So it's a compilation of people. But right at the bottom, you say, and then, sorry, I'll start again. And then Zach told me later, so this was after, so that's the job that I know of. And then later, when I was at the station, Zach told someone else, and I can't remember who else was with me, like secretly where the cameras weren't looking at work, that he had someone scratching.
You see? Yeah.
Are you there saying, are you there saying that later that day at the station, he told you about what I call the scratching incident?
No, that was at a later date, I believe.
A later date. All right. So the first time that you had this conversation with Zachary Rolfe was back at the police station at changeover. You remember that you were at the police station. You remember roughly where you were?
Yes, I do.
And you can't remember now whether Fish was present when that conversation occurred?
No, and I've said that in a later statement.
Yeah. And you can't remember how long the conversation went?
Definitely cannot.
You can't remember whether other officers who had been party to the apprehension of Malcolm Ryder were present also?
No, they were not there.
So it was just you and Zachary Rolfe and possibly your partner, Fish?
Yes, that's correct.
Presumably the two of you were looking at each other when you were talking?
Yes.
We know that it's at 3 o'clock, so it's happened, I can tell you, if that's the right time, but roughly an hour after Mr. Ryder had been apprehended.
Yes.
So you must have been able to see his forehead?
You mean Zach's forehead?
Yes, Zach's forehead.
I cannot remember his forehead.
Right. You might not remember now, but there was nothing that stopped you being able to see physically whether he had any injuries apparent to his face.
No.
We know that he was photographed at the police station that day after this incident.
Okay, that's what we know, and that's what we know.
And we also know that there is an injury to his forehead which was photographed on that day, the same day as the incident.
Okay, that's what you're telling me.
I want you to have a look at some photographs which are lastly displayed. It's 3-91.
Are you sure it's 3-91?
I hope so. That's what my instructor's giving me. It'll be in the right volume. It'll be in the right volume. That's 3-91. Just while that's being put up, Ms. Campagnaro, can I just ask you about two other people? Do you know Lucas O'Donoghue?
Yes.
How do you know him?
I met him very briefly at the station, but he went out bush for quite some period.
It's probably unlikely, but I'll ask anyway. Do you remember Lucas O'Donoghue, who's the person responsible for taking the photographs I'm about to show you at being at the station on the 11th of January 2018?
I can't remember, sorry.
Could you have a look at the second photograph in this picture, which is now being displayed? You can see, can't you, that there's a plainly visible mark above the left eyebrow of Zachary Rolfe?
I can see some discoloration, yes.
And you can see, can't you, that one might describe that, if you like, as it appears to be a scratch mark.
Yep, that's correct.
And you were looking directly at Zachary Rolfe when he was describing to you the incident, how it unfolded, before Malcolm Ryder.
Correct.
And that injury was present, wasn't it, when you were talking to him?
I'm not saying yes or no to that. I cannot recall.
Right. So you say it might have been visible and plain to you?
Could have been.
Now, isn't it the case that contrary to the evidence that you've given in this court, and indeed what you've said on multiple occasions in your statement, that Zachary Rolfe never ever suggested that that scratch or that mark on his forehead had been inflicted by a female detective? That never happened.
Can you repeat that?
The truth of the matter, can I suggest to you, Ms. Campagnaro, is that Zachary Rolfe has never ever suggested that an injury to his forehead was manufactured by a female detective scratching it.
No, it's not a fabrication, and you're trying to put words in my mouth.
Well, what else could it be?
I don't know where the scratch was.
All right. Let me ask you this. You say you don't know where the scratch was. He told you, in any event, that a scratch had been created by a detective to somehow justify the use of force. That's the gist of what you've been alleging, isn't it?
Yes, he did say that.
Right. So, in other words, he was prepared to fabricate evidence.
Yes, he was. I'm sorry, but he was.
All right. So he told you that he was prepared, he had fabricated evidence?
Yes, he did.
And he told you that that scratch was done, had been created deliberately to justify what had happened?
Yes, he did.
And you were the person, one of the two police officers that was involved in the interview of Malcolm Ryder?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
You were one of the two police officers involved in the interview of Malcolm Ryder?
Yes, I was.
So you were part of the investigation team?
I was.
So potentially you were always going to be a witness in the trial of Malcolm Ryder?
Not that I'm aware of. I never got called.
Well, you may not have been called, but plainly, if you're an interviewing officer in an investigation, you could always be called.
That's correct.
Did you provide a statement about your contribution to that interview?
Not that I can recall, but maybe I did. I don't know.
In any event, you know that the matter was going to go to trial? You knew that the matter was going to trial later?
Well, you assume so, yes.
Well, you knew, didn't you, that the defence was suggesting the excessive use of force, bad conduct by police?
Correct.
And you knew, didn't you, from apparently this conversation on more than one occasion with Zachary Rolfe, that evidence had been fabricated?
That's correct.
So you therefore also knew that Zachary Rolfe was going to intend to perjure himself to justify what he had done?
Well, I don't know that she would know that unless he told you that he was going to
be promoting the next
year.
Well, you knew that he was giving evidence in trial.
Yes, I did know that.
And I thought your evidence before lunch was that in the lead up to the trial, he was having conversations with you about the issues that were going to develop in the trial.
We had numerous conversations, yes.
In any event, you felt very sorry, so I understand, for Malcolm Ryder because of the injury he had sustained when he was apprehended?
I did, actually, because he had to come to the police station and sign every day because he was on bail.
Now, you also, didn't you, because of your training and because of the code of conduct that exists for all police officers, that you were absolutely required to disclose and report anything that would affect your policing or policing generally that came to your attention?
That's true.
And you knew, didn't you, that because evidence had apparently been fabricated, there was always the real possibility that Malcolm Ryder might be wrongly convicted of an offence he didn't commit.
That's correct.
So is it your evidence that you were prepared to remain mute and allow that man to be condemned to a potentially false prosecution? Is that your evidence?
That's true, but what are you trying to get at?
Well, I'm asking you this. If you felt sympathy and you were sorry for Malcolm Ryder, you told us that.
That's true.
You've said that unlike your good self, many others within the office were using racist terms that you found offensive.
Unlike my good self?
Yes.
She didn't exclude the possibility that she might have used a term like that while she was
speaking to the conversation. I'll put another way. Ms. Campagnaro, what I'm getting at is this. Do you know what perverting the course of justice is?
I do.
Well, isn't it the case that you, armed with all of that information that you told us about, apparently multiple admissions, the fabricating evidence, potentially perverting or perjuring, potentially this man, Malcolm Ryder, being condemned for an offence he didn't commit, you were prepared to remain silent?
Well, just before the witness answers that question, might I ask Your Honour to grant a certificate for this witness so that she can speak freely about that matter? I don't...
No, I think that's appropriate, Your Honour. Application.
Let me just hear from Dr. Freckleton, who I understand it.
We appear to be inching toward a suggestion that the witness has committed in some way a criminal offence. Before we get to that point, and my respectful submission would be appropriate for an objection to be made on her behalf, I make that application and ask for a certificate of the issue.
Does anyone want to explain to the Ms. Campagnaro what's happening?
Yes, perhaps we could have a brief pause, Your Honour. If Your Honour would go off the bench, no doubt Dr. Freckleton would like to do that, otherwise I can.
All right. Ms. Campagnaro, again, sometimes issues come up in proceedings, an issue's just arisen. It's no reflection on the way you're giving evidence or anything like that. It's just something we need to deal with. So I'm just going to go and have a short adjournment so that you can speak to your lawyer.
Okay.
Please be seated.
Thank you, Your Honour. I've had the opportunity of speaking to Ms. Campagnaro. It's a little difficult to understand what's taking place, but as best I can apprehend it, my little friend seems to be inching towards suggesting that the witness has entered into some kind of a conspiracy to attempt to pervert the course of justice with his client. If there's any suggestion of anything to do with the commission of criminal activity, she's instructed me to object on her behalf to answering, but she's more than happy to do so, given the certificate by Your Honour.
Yes. In those circumstances, Ms. Campagnaro, I'm now giving you a certificate under Section 38 of the Coroner's Act of the Northern Territory, and that means that you are required to continue to answer questions, but if there's anything in answers that might incriminate you or any other proceedings, then they can't, then the evidence can't be used in any other proceedings other than for a prosecution.
Thank you.
Okay.
What I'm trying to understand, Ms. Campagnaro, is this. You've told us on the evidence that you've given and indeed in earlier statements provided to the Northern Territory Police that Zachary Rolfe had made admissions of what could only be described as criminal conduct.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
And yet you didn't challenge him on it?
At the time, no.
You didn't consider that it was appropriate in those circumstances even to say to him, you can't do this to this man?
No, I've been in the job a month and just didn't act like that. Well, so no, I didn't say that to him.
You may not have been in, you may have only been in the job for a month, but you were fresh out of cadet school. You would know what the difference between right and wrong. Yes?
Yes.
You know, and you had been taught and trained about what criminal conduct is.
Yeah.
You yourself had arrested people for criminal conduct.
Yes.
You couldn't possibly think that it was appropriate to fabricate evidence to justify illegality.
No.
And yet you say you said nothing to anyone.
That's correct.
And the first time you ever make any disclosure or allegation against Zachary Roth or anybody else is after you're approached by police and after your engagement had been ended.
That's correct.
Now, you said before that you were prolific, accepted that you were prolific in your posting on Facebook and Instagram.
Correct.
Throughout 2018, until Zachary Rolfe pulled the pin on your engagement, you were prolific, were you not, about him, who he was, what he stood for.
I think I'd ask that the question be broken into two. There are two very important and very separate components to it, Your Honour. First is as to who pulls the pin, and then this is secondary part.
Yes, I don't.
Fair enough. No, I said that. It was Zachary Rolfe who terminated the relationship with you, was it not?
At the very end, yeah.
He's the one that ended the engagement.
It was a bit of a mutual thing, I'm going to say. But it was him that made the final decision after he'd moved out.
When the decision was made by him, the final decision, to yes. move out and the relationship was over, by that stage, yes. you had posted frequently, had you not, your wedding plans?
I had, yes.
And it's true, is it not, that when the relationship ended, you were bitter?
No, I'm not going to use the word bitter, sorry. I will not let you put that word in my mouth.
All right. Do you agree with this much, that you would regularly post on both Instagram and Facebook disparaging remarks about Zachary Roth?
Sorry, what was that?
You accused him, did you not, of all sorts of things after the relationship broke down, didn't you?
That's incorrect, no.
You accused him, for example, of infidelity or sleeping with other people?
In what context was this?
You certainly weren't complimentary about him, were you, in your postings?
In my postings?
Yes.
That's not true.
What about conversations with a lot of people afterwards? You were furious about the fact that he'd ended the engagement, weren't you?
No, I think I was more upset that the relationship had ended just like any normal person.
I'm going to ask you about a photograph I'm about to produce to you.
Sorry, can I just explain to my learned friend, can I just see that photograph? Is it in the brief of evidence?
Not yet.
Okay, so it doesn't work like that, Mr. Edwardson. In an inquest, you need to provide that material to counsel assisting. Right. Counsel assisting then needs to provide it to the court right. officer. That's how it works
right.
in a non-adversarial proceeding. Thank you so much.
And look, I'm not familiar with the procedure that Dr. Tawar is. I've appeared in many inquests, and I can say that that's the very first time ever in my professional life for anyone introducing an exhibit in a coronial inquest.
Not an objection to producing an exhibit. It's just that it works by providing it to counsel assisting so that they can then have it available for the court officer, and then it's tendered through counsel assisting. So I hope that assists them in the plan.
It does.
I'll just show you.
Dr. Perkins kindly agreed to photograph and attest it to Ms. Campagnaro, so that, that way she can at least identify.
Is that the image?
I hope you've got an image of a photograph with the Governor General, Zachary Rolfe, and yourself.
Yes.
That is you in that photograph?
It is.
And is that the occasion that we talked about earlier when I was asking you some questions about after the rider incident you attended in Canberra with Zachary Rolfe so that he could receive his bravery medal?
Yes.
And this is after the rider incident?
Well, yes, it would have been.
And before, of course, the rider trial, which is later that year?
Yes.
And at that stage you'd said nothing to anybody about...
No.
The fabrication of evidence?
No, I hadn't.
No one?
No.
And indeed, the very first person that you ever made an allegation about Zachary Rolfe was when you spoke to Detective Finuto. Isn't that the case in that very first interview that we've just been through?
That's correct.
And before then, you've never said anything to a soul.
I mean, I may have spoke to my friends about it, but I can't be 100% certain exactly what I spoke to them about, because it's actually quite embarrassing.
Well, Ms. Campagnaro, it's not about embarrassment. What I'm putting to you is that the reason you never told anybody is because it never happened.
That's not true.
What I'm suggesting to you, Ms. Campagnaro, is that there is no way you, as a person, would have ever allowed Malcolm Ryder to be condemned on false evidence with your knowledge on your watch.
What are you trying to get at?
Well, if it had happened, surely any common sense of decency, not to mention the law, would have required you to make sure that he could not be condemned on fabricated evidence.
I'm sorry, sir, but it did happen. And no amount of you trying to say it didn't is going to change what I'm saying. It did happen. And that's that.
If it did happen, why didn't you put a stop to the prosecution of Malcolm Ryder?
Because I didn't. I was in a relationship with him.
What, you were prepared to sweep it under the carpet because you were in a relationship with him? Is that what you're telling us?
That's what happened, yeah.
So you were prepared to sacrifice Malcolm Ryder on the strength of your relationship?
I don't like what you're getting at. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the truth of the matter, isn't it? Isn't it?
You're trying to paint me out to be this person that I'm not.
Well, if you're not that person, you would never have allowed that matter to go to court on fabricated or false evidence, would you?
But it did.
And you let that happen?
Well, yeah, I don't think I was the only person that let that happen, but yeah.
When you say you don't think you were the only person to let that happen, are you suggesting that the others were in on the fix, so to speak?
The people that were involved in the job, I'm sure they knew exactly what had happened.
And why do you say that?
Because they were there and they were present.
Exactly. They were there, they were present, they know what happened. You weren't, were you?
No, I wasn't.
Do you know a police officer by the name of... Oh, sorry, before I forget your honour, I see it's Tender at that photograph.
I'll tender that on... Sure.
Do you know a police officer by the name of Cameron Chatterton?
Who, sorry?
Cameron Chatterton.
I believe so.
How do you know him?
He worked at Alice Springs with me.
He what, sorry?
He worked at Alice Springs.
He worked at Alice Springs. And he was working at Alice Springs, wasn't he, on the 11th of January 2018?
I don't know if he was there on the day, but he was a member.
And I suggest to you that not only was he there on the day, but he provided a statement specifically identifying the mark on Zachary Robb's forehead.
Okay, I don't know that.
Had anybody ever shown you the photograph of Zachary Robb, or that mark that I showed you before, photograph number two, in the photograph produced? Has anybody ever shown you that before?
I'm not sure, I can't recall, sorry.
When you say you're not sure, I can't recall, as far as I can tell, it doesn't appear that that photograph was ever shown to you in the statements or the interviews that were conducted with Panuto and others.
No, not when I gave my statements, no.
Now, I don't want you to say anything about any conversation that you've had with Dr. Freckleton, who's your lawyer, as you understand, right? It's covered by legal professional privilege. Do you understand?
Okay.
Leaving him aside, has anybody else, to your knowledge, ever shown you that photograph and asked you, did you see that mark on Zachary Rolfe on the 11th?
I might have. I can't recall.
When did you stop being involved in the Ryder investigation?
After I gave that interview with him.
Right, so the way a prosecution works is this. Different police officers have different roles to play, correct?
Correct.
You might have the search and seizure, you might have the arrest, those who are involved in that process, and then there's the subsequent interview.
Yes.
To be able to interview, you need to know something about the case.
Yeah.
So you have to be briefed by those who are responsible, don't you?
Yes, that's how it's meant to go.
Otherwise you can't possibly participate in an interview.
Yes.
So you need to know as much as is possible, don't you, before the interview commences.
Correct.
So it would make logical sense, would it not, in the case of Ryder, that you would have consulted the police officers involved in his apprehension?
I assume so, yeah.
You would need to have a comprehensive understanding of what went down before he was presented at the police station.
Can I just clarify? There's two police officers conducting this interview. There's the senior officer and the Byron Sanders taking part.
Yes,
ma'am. So I'm not sure. Maybe it's correct.
So you want that for the witness to say?
All right.
I'm putting propositions which I'm entitled to in legal fashion. And the witness can correct me and resist, and the objections taken. But there is nothing impermissible about what I'm putting at the moment. Now, Ms. Campagnaro, I'll start again. I'm asking you generally about the process that's involved in a police investigation, an arrest and a subsequent interview. Ron's quite correct. You were the subordinate. You were the Mr. Fisher, or Fish, was your superior, or he was the one that was, as it were, more senior to you for the interview purpose. Is that right?
That's correct.
And this was your very first interview that you've ever been
very, involved. Very, very first interview.
So it would not be easy to forget your very first interview, wouldn't it?
Apparently not.
No. So as your first interview, you would remember, I imagine it was quite confronting as your first interview. Was it?
Well, of course.
Right. And so what I'm simply putting to you, as it was your very first interview, you wanted to understand what the case was about before you went into that interview room.
I cannot tell you what I was thinking 4 years ago.
Can you remember what information you had before the interview commenced?
No, I don't remember.
Do you remember whether you watched the body-worn video, for example, to familiarise yourself with the circumstances of the arrest?
I did see the body-worn, yes, but I don't know if it was before or after.
Where did you... Well, it must have been before, mustn't it? Because you wouldn't be any good after the interview.
Well, I object. I mean, there's no proper basis for that question.
No, there isn't.
Put it another way.
There might be a proper basis. I don't know. There might be evidence that it was viewed by this officer before the interview, but I'm not aware of it.
Do you know whether you looked at the body-worn video before or after the interview?
I don't know, like I already said to you twice.
All right, let me put it this way too. It would make sense, wouldn't it, that you would look at the body-worn video before going into an interview, because the body-worn video would show you, in very graphic terms, what had happened in connection with the arrest.
That would make sense, yes. Yeah.
And it's obvious, isn't it, that anybody who's going to conduct an interview would likely want to look at the body-worn video so they could ask appropriate questions armed with that information.
That's correct.
And so whilst you might not now remember the obvious, was it before or after the interview that you looked at the body-worn, I think you accept this much. It would make sense to look at the body-worn video first.
That's correct.
Now, when you looked at the body-worn video, whenever that was, where was it in the police station?
I don't know.
Was your superior officer, Mr. Fisher, or Fish, was he with you when that happened?
I don't know.
Who was the active questioner in the interview?
Not me. Not it would have been Fisher.
It would have been Fisher when you say not you. Was it or wasn't it? I don't remember.
I was junior. It wouldn't have been me leading the questions.
All right. But you were present when the questions were asked?
Yes, I was there.
Were any allegations put at all about the forehead injury that was seen in the photograph number 2 that I showed you? Do you remember now or you don't remember?
I can't recall. I don't have the transcript of that interview. Do you?
So, I'm asking questions, I'm afraid, Ms. Campagnaro.
Well, just to be of assistance to the witness, I can let the court know, because it's an issue that may concern Your Honour. We're currently looking for a transcript of that interview, which of course should exist, and a record, and we can't locate it currently, so further efforts will be made. So there's nothing that we can show Ms. Campagnaro. Ms.
Thank you, I'm grateful for that.
And this interview would have been videoed?
Yes, Superintendent Morgan instructs. So we'll make further efforts to see where it is. It's not on the rider file that we have on the brief of evidence, Your Honour.
So potentially a lost record of interview?
Potentially, yeah.
I assume it's almost impossible for you to say how long you looked at the video, what you actually saw on the video, the body worn video.
No, I can't really recall specific details.
All right, I'm nearly finished. I just need to make sure I understand all of this. In any event, having gone to Government House in a relationship, you've told us that Zachary Roth ultimately terminates the engagement. You deny that you were extremely bitter about the breakup.
Yes, I do deny that. This is not the right term.
What was the right term?
I'd say sad after a breakup would be a normal term, not bitter.
Now, when the shooting came to your attention, you started texting your friends, didn't you?
They started texting me.
They started texting you because they knew about your past relationship with Zachary Roth.
Sorry, what was that?
They knew about your past relationship with Zachary Roth.
Yes, they would have.
And so that's why they were contacting you?
Yes.
And is one of your friends or acquaintances a person by the name of Ernie Bellis?
He's not a friend of mine, no, but he contacted me.
Right. In any event, Ernie Bellis contacted you in connection with the fact that Zachary Roth had been arrested.
Yes, he did.
And did you have an exchange with him and, in fact, disclose text messages that you had with him about that issue?
Yes, I was asked to disclose them.
And you were asked to disclose them to police?
Yes.
For the purposes of their investigation?
Yes, that's true.
Into, amongst other things, your allegations against Zachary Roth?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
I withdraw. In any event, when you were engaging in text messages with Ernie Bellis, and this is in, I suggest, or on the 14th of November
2019. Yes.
Did you ask Ernie Bellis, did you say this? I need to get his number again. That's Zachary Ross.
If that's what it says, then that's what it says.
Could you have a look at, have you got your statement which attaches all of those text messages?
Let me look.
Your Honour, that's at 8-8, so if there's anything that needs to come up on the screen, then that one we can put it up.
Oh, thank you. If you could put it up, it's about right at the very end. I think it's appendix A. Can I just approach, if I may?
Mine says 8-7.
So there's a statement that... Depends what one of the things will show.
I can see them.
You got them?
The one I'm looking, yes, I do.
The one I'm looking for is, it's a text exchange which occurs on the 14th of November 2019, commencing at 21:50. And you'll see at the top of the page I'm reading from, it says, might have come up as if bloody autocorrect, whatever that means, but I assume it's somebody dictating and Siri's gone mad, whatever. Do you see that?
No, sorry, I'm just looking. There's a lot of them.
Just go right to, I think it's about the second to last page.
Sorry, so the autocorrect
is... Okay, you're right.
So it is 8-7.
8-7. And is there...
Yes.
And at the top, the very first thing under any bells is Y, exclamation mark. Do you see that?
No. What are you trying to get me to look at?
Well, what I'm trying to get you to look at is an exchange.
Just tell me.
Where you say this to him, I suggest, I need to get his number again. I'm probably the last person he would think would have his back.
Yes.
Is that the exchange that you have with him?
Well, if that's what it says, then that's what it says.
Can you have a look at what's coming up on the screen?
Yes. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I never got his number and never contacted him, if that's what you're going to ask.
Well, don't be defensive. I just want to ask you about this text message. Do you see there, it says, I need to get his number again, right? That's what you were saying to Wendy Bellis?
Yeah.
So you were asking him for Zachary Roth's number?
No, she's not asking.
Well, you were telling him...
I'm actually not. I'm sorry, I actually didn't ask for it.
Well, you said, I need to get his number again. You were expressing to him your desire to get his number, however that might happen.
In this text conversation, yeah.
Thank you. And you said, I'm probably the last person he would think would have his back.
Okay, so what are you trying to get at with this?
But I do. Can you just concentrate on the question, please? You went on to say, I'm probably the last person he would think would have his back, but I do. Do you see that?
Yes.
So you were
see that.
You were telling Bernie Bellis that you had Zach Rolfe's back.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
I can't recall. Maybe to do with what had happened?
Did you ever get his number?
Definitely not, no.
Did you try and get his number?
No, I didn't.
Well, do you think you had his back when you accused him of a whole array of things set out that we've traversed today in court and set out in your statements?
I object. It's not having someone's back or not having someone's back to come to court and tell the truth about what somebody has told you. So having someone's back in the context after learning about a tragedy is one thing, but then months later being asked to give evidence is another. And so I don't actually see how it follows, unless my learned friend suggests that to have someone's back, you need to not tell the truth when you're asked questions.
Did you have Zach Rolfe's back when you found out from him that he had fabricated evidence and you were going to permit Malcolm Ryder to go to trial? Is that what was happening then?
Having his back and not telling superiors about it.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose so, yes.
So you had his back and you were prepared to condemn Malcolm Ryder because of your relationship with him.
I object to that, Your Honour. That's just a gross mischaracterisation. If anyone was condemning Malcolm Ryder, it's my own defence plan. He's the one falsifying according to the evidence you're hearing now.
Your Honour, there is one basic thing, and that is firstly, these allegations have been dismissed by two separate investigations. That's the first point. The second point is it's a matter for Your Honour to determine about the credibility and reliability of evidence, and it's not for counsel assisting or Dr. Freckleton to accuse my client of in fact committing these acts, which are contested.
Well, Your Honour, might I just say for the record, I absolutely agree with my learned friend. It is not for me, and I'm not making a judgment of this witness or inviting Your Honour to at this point in time. It is absolutely for Your Honour. The only thing I am trying to do now is to ensure that questions are asked of Ms. Campagnaro in a fair way. And I can assure Your Honour and my learned friend that when Constable Rolfe comes to give evidence, I will be doing the same thing to ensure that he is asked questions in a way that are fair, clear and reasonable so that Your Honour can make an assessment of his evidence.
And Your Honour will have heard that I chose my words carefully and added according to this witness. I'm making no accusations.
All right, Ms. Campagnaro, I'll finish up by putting this to you as I must. I suggest to you that the allegations that you've levelled against Zachary Rolfe about him fabricating evidence and so on that we've traversed at some length are false, and you know that they're false.
That's not true.
I'm suggesting to you that if it had happened as you suggest it did, there is no way a person like yourself would have condemned Malcolm Ryder and allowed him to go to trial and be put at risk of imprisonment.
I object to the question on the same ground as previously mentioned. This assertion of condemning someone is just emotive nonsense.
What else could it be described as?
The fact that she may have allowed someone to go to trial,
right, I'll use allow
without
instead of
coming forward and providing additional evidence is very different from condemning them to an outcome.
You were prepared to allow Malcolm Ryder to go to trial knowing, as you say, Zachary Rolfe had fabricated evidence. That's what you're telling this court.
Well, I didn't tell anyone.
No. That was okay, was it?
No, it wasn't okay.
And not only that, he said it on more than one occasion and you didn't ever challenge him on it, you say.
No, I didn't. Have you ever met anyone that always has an excuse for everything?
Right. He had an excuse for everything, didn't he?
Yes, he does.
Right. In any event, when the matter came towards trial and you knew, as you told us, that the defence were going to challenge the lawfulness of his apprehension, you must have been on notice that the matter was coming to trial, not only because you're in a relationship, because you were one of the interviewing officers.
I only knew because he told me.
And when he told you that the matter was going to trial, did you challenge him, given the conversations that you'd had about what he had done, according to you?
Not that I can recall, no.
Do you even question the morality of what he was suggesting to you?
No, not to him, no.
Why not?
Because I didn't.
Nor did you challenge or suggest to anybody else? You didn't tell anybody about what happened?
No, I didn't.
Not a soul?
Not that I can recall, no.
And then finally, some time, considerable time later, the first time you make these allegations is after the relationship has broken down.
The relationship had ended, not broken down, just ended like a natural course of life.
Right. The engagement was terminated.
Yes, it was over.
And it's only after all of that that you make these allegations for the first time to Detective Panuto.
So I had to give an interview as a part of the criminal case. I was assisting the Northern Territory Police, not because I did it. I contacted them, they contacted me. I had to assist the Northern Territory Police.
After he was charged with murder?
Yes. I didn't have a choice.
Thank you.
Ms. Campagnaro, from your perspective, is the morality of Zachary Rolfe one of the reasons why the two of you went your separate ways?
Towards the end, yeah.
Thank you.
Just briefly, Your Honour. Ms. Campagnaro, at the beginning of the questions, I failed to take you to each of the separate documents. So just to be clear, you were interviewed on the 19th of August 2020 for the first time?
That's correct.
And that appears at 8-7. You were interviewed again, or you gave a very short statement that's just 9 paragraphs, on the 15th of October 2020. And that's when you provide the Northern Territory Police with a number of different emails and text messages that are really clarifying statements that you made in your first interview. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that appears at 8-8. And then you were asked to provide a further statement, a statutory declaration, which again clarifies evidence that you've given previously. Is that right?
That's correct.
And that's at 8-8A. Just in relation to that very first statement when the police come on to South Australia on the 19th of August 2020, Officer Panuto explains, page 2, Claudia, the reason we're here is that we are involved in an investigation into a fatal police shooting that occurred in the Northern Territory of Yuendumu on the 9th of November 2019, and you've been identified as a potential witness in respect to various aspects of this investigation. We're obviously requesting that you will provide us with this statement to help us establish some background or facts and circumstances around the actual incident themselves and the persons involved. That suggests that the police contacted you to request that statement. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
In your second statement that I referred to earlier of the 15th of October 2020, you might recall that you attach a number of different text exchanges that you'd had with Annalise.
Yeah.
Do you remember her? Was she a police officer in the Northern Territory at that time?
Yeah, she was.
Okay. And on the 19th of November, she says, I'll just read it to you so you've got the flow of it. Hey love, sorry this is a bit late. There's a lot going on here and processing things has taken a while for most of us. I just wanted to see how you were with everything that's happened. Just wanted to make sure you're all good. So she was in effect checking up on you?
Yes, she was.
You thought that was a nice thing for her to do?
Yeah, it was.
And there was a back and forward text exchange. And one of the things that you say to her after she says, we're all hurting and angry and I've wanted to message you, but I've needed to be able to process things before I did. Just know I'm here anytime, regardless of what's happened between you two. You have every right to be here with us and a part of how we feel. You will always still be part of this family. You interpreted that as her being kind and reaching out to make sure that your emotional state was okay. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
And you write back to her, I totally understand, and you're so sweet. I've been hurting from here about it all too. I've been hounded by people, so I deactivated my Facebook and have been laying low. I feel it for you all and appreciate your message. I'm here for you too, all of you. It's a dark time for him, and of course I still care. I'm so worried for him and all of you. The him that you're referring to there, who was that?
Zach.
Did you feel for him having been in this situation given he had been charged with a criminal offence?
Of course. It was all over the news. People were sending me screenshots. Of course I was concerned about him.
Would you ever have gone out of your way to contact the Northern Territory Police at any time prior to the trial if they hadn't contacted you?
Absolutely not.
I think that's clear. You were asked some questions about the body-worn video footage that Miss Wilde, who appears on behalf of Naja, showed to you. You remember that? It's the one you referred to, a child who was in a bin, and you told the police about that in your first interview. At page 45, you say, actually, no, I saw once, everyone was looking for this. I think it was a kid, like it's always Indigenous children. I think it was a young Indigenous man. that young Indigenous man, I'm informed, is 14 years old, and he has an intellectual disability. Was there any discussion about that when you saw that video footage?
No, not that I can recall.
Do you remember seeing that body-worn video at the station or outside of the station?
I'm not sure, sorry.
Did you ever see any body-worn video footage on Zach's phone?
Oh, not that I can recall. I've seen body-worn videos on phones, but I don't know if it was his phone.
When you were in Alice Springs, I would draw that. At any stage while you were in the Northern Territory Police, do you recall getting any instruction about what to do with your body-worn video footage of an arrest, for example?
Just that you have to dock the camera after your shift or just after the job, and then it will be uploaded to the Axon website, and then you had to label it. That's all I remember.
Okay. And was that so that it would be available for that file if the matter went to court?
Yes.
Did you ever receive any instruction about not showing that, or when you could or couldn't show the body-worn video footage to other officers?
Not that I can recall, no.
Do you recall knowing yourself back then whether it was appropriate to show body-worn video footage to anybody who wasn't a police officer?
Yeah, it's definitely not appropriate.
And do you recall getting any instruction about whether it would have been okay to get your own personal phone and film body-worn video camera footage?
Oh, I think we just knew we couldn't do that.
Well, you knew you couldn't do that, is that right?
Yes, yes.
The last question is this. In relation to the questions you were asked by my learned friend, Mr. Edwardson, about whether you let evidence go to court for Malcolm Ryder. You've given evidence that you never raised your concerns about what happened with Mr. Ryder's case before you were interviewed by police. Reflecting on the dynamic of your relationship, tell me if you need to stop before I ask you this, but reflecting on your relationship with the dynamic of your relationship with Zach, was there anything in particular about the relationship?
Sorry, Amelia, you're on the camera.
Sorry.
Remember, it's the mirror set. Oh. Sorry, it's my sister. Sorry, I'm at home.
That's all right.
I could see her, I was wet.
I'll start that question again. You've given evidence that you were actually still in the relationship with Zach when the complaint raised by Mr. Ryder was first heard, and you've said that was about 6 months after the January interview. So
yes.
Her Honour understands that you were still in the relationship, and
yes.
Everyone can appreciate dynamics of a relationship that's romantic, but was there anything in particular about your relationship with Zach that you reflect on that might have stopped you coming forward?
I thought I was in love. So, you know, you've got these love goggles on and the last thing you're thinking about is dobbing them into the police. I'm sure everyone else has done that. And at the time, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and you think back and think, I really wish I'd told someone about it, but I just didn't.
And you probably, you've said a lot about this, and I'm about to sit down, Ms. Campanero, but when you reflect back as a more mature person now, 28 years of age, is there anything else you want to say about that on reflection?
I look back at that time and I'm incredibly saddened that I was a part of those cascade of events. You know, I should have told someone that he was doing the wrong thing, but I didn't, and all I can say now is that I'm sorry.
Those are my questions, Your Honour. Thank you, Ms. Campagnaro.
Ms. Campagnaro, I appreciate from what you're saying in your evidence that it has been difficult to answer questions of police and have that forced upon you, and also to come to court and to give evidence today. However, we do appreciate that even though you've moved on, you're being able to reflect on what happened back in 2018 and share some of your evidence and experiences with the Sydney inquest. Thank you very much.
Fiona, just before you do this, just one quick thing, Jared, so I don't need break to detain. Fiona, I've notified the media who are here in court. Might I ask for just an interim non-publication order over a number of names that came out today that I was not anticipating? And they are, my learned friend Mr. McMahon asked some questions about whether certain people had used racist terms. I've counted six specific names, and they include officers Bowens, Kirkby and Kirstenfeld. I'm less concerned about that because those officers are legally represented, and I can provide for procedural fairness by informing their legal representatives, and if they need certain questions answered, then they at least have an opportunity to put on further evidence to deal with that. But there are three names, Zendeli, Boney and Barclay, and I'll double check the transcript tonight to make sure that I haven't missed anybody. Bonnie. I beg your pardon, Bonnie. Bonnie, Miss Zendeli, and then an Officer Barclay. And I just asked for a non-publication order or an interim non-publication order over their names until I have the opportunity to discuss it further, because they have not yet, they're not legally represented, unless Dr. Freckleton, Dr. Freckleton appears for the agency, but also they just haven't had an opportunity yet to answer what are allegations that affect their reputation.
Yes, no one wishes to be heard in relation to that, do they?
I support the application, right.
Thank you. So I'll make an interim non-publication order in relation to the three names identified by counsel assisting, that order is in force under further order of the court.
Thank you, Honour, and we'll make sure that the transcript. Yes, I beg your pardon. I think that's true. Alistair Gall.
She denied
I'm grateful. I don't need to trouble Your Honour with that. He's giving evidence yet next week, and my learned friends remind me that the evidence from Ms. Campagnaro was that he was not using those terms.
If there's nothing further, we'll adjourn till 9:30.
Well, Sam, Karina got our chair.